There's your 8 o'clock rooster crow and coffee pour. Good morning, Arizona homeowners. You are tuned in to Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 27 years. This is the 8 o'clock hour. We now open the broadcast up to all our affiliates across the great state of Arizona, KTAR in Phoenix, KNST in Tucson, Chasm in Sedona, KQNA in Prescott, CAF in Flagstaff, and KGVY in Green Valley. And that's the order each one picked us up. Over the last, I guess it was 04 was the first time we added a second station. And since then, have six great affiliates across the state. And we are in the Outdoor Living Hour. And I tell you what, John, on Talking Trees, you've had us on a ridgeline at Granite Mountain next to the champion juniper tree. You've had the record peeling time of a... pomegranate fruit live in studio on action. You've had us in Queen Creek at Boyce Thompson Arboretum for a tree climbing contest. You've had us at NAU campus for a tree climbing contest. And now we're in. Am I missing anything?
That's all that I can remember, too. But this is going to be, I think, in the top of them all. This is a beautiful day outdoors at the Arizona State University campus. And we are touring 11 awesome trees that are scattered around campus. This is part of the...
Now, scattered around, but pretty well contained. You're in about a maybe a half a mile...
Right. Well, the ASU Tempe campus hosts an arboretum, and it's a large tree tour that features dozens of trees, and it takes you far and wide, all the way around this multi-acre campus. But today is a tour to trees that's sponsored by the Arizona State Land Department, Arizona Community Tree Council, and several other agencies, including Arizona Nursery Association. And it's featuring only 11 of the trees. And they're kind of concentrated, clustered together, so that it's you're not having to walk quite so far. I walked it this morning in about 20, 30 minutes. You can do it really quick if you'd like to, but if you want to pause at each one, it's a really cool tour because at several of the trees, they have certified arborists standing by with information sheets that tell you about the trees. If you'd want to buy one, possibly, it gives you a lot of the specs and the characteristics of the tree. And also just they can give you some general information about those trees. But a beautiful day today to see some trees. If you're anywhere close by and want to get out and take a little walk, if you're planning some exercise anyway, what a great way to get that and also get a little education on some really great trees.
And we're standing right now at tree number 3 on the tour. You don't have to start at 1. You don't have to end at 11. You can just navigate it, but they've got it numbered so you can figure out where on the map you are at any given time. We're at tree number 3, which is a white...
Sapote. Yes, this it's amazing because I saw this tree 37 years ago when I was on a tree tour here at the Arboretum. I graduated from ASU in 1979, 37 years ago. It's a long time ago. The campus has hardly changed. This is one tree on the tour that is actually a little bit difficult to find. You have to go through a secret little passageway.
Which was really cool. I thought you were nuts when
I know.
I was like, I remember. You must be going on a detour.
I knew it's inside here. This little quadrant, which features a bunch of jacarandas and some orchids. And here on the north side of the little quadrant is this large 25-30 foot white sapote. White sapote is a fruit tree, but it's a tropical fruit tree that can grow here. It can grow anywhere where you can grow citrus. It has the same kind of qualities in terms of its frost tenderness, but it is a really great tree. It has these fruits about the size of a small apple, and they are beautiful. You know, here in Arizona, we have this ability to plant tropicals if you give them a protected environment. You can plant papayas, you can plant guavas, loquats, these white sapote, and a handful of other exotic kind of tropical trees that are just really wonderful for Arizona. There's even a variety of avocado that grow well here as well. So this is the only tropical I think that's on the tour, but wow, this is a really great example of one. There's lots of fruit on it right now. It's a little green. It'll ripen up later this summer. But it's beautiful.
And the leaves and the bark look nothing like when you say citrus, I think orange. I think grapefruit. I think
lemon. Right.
This looks nothing like either one of those.
No, it's a tropical. This is more like a papaya. It's got some large green waxy leaves and larger than citrus. But yeah, this is a great spot for it in this little protected environment. Gets no late afternoon sun. That's sort of a key to success with tropicals is keep them protected from the wind. If you can get them up tight to a building and definitely protected from the late afternoon sun, you'll generally have some good success with these trees.
And we are officially in April. So what's on our talking trees for April? What in the garden? It's we've been talking all spring long that it's been an early spring. Should we just jump straight to May's talking points?
No, this is prime time for doing all sorts of planting and pruning. Speaking of pruning, there is a few seats left in my pruning class I'm teaching tomorrow at the Desert Botanical Garden between 2 and 5 o'clock. We just had 70 people showed up at my pruning class yesterday for the city of Scottsdale. It was just a great outdoor class. All my classes are hands-on kind of demonstrations, so you get not only a great introduction to pruning, but I really want people to have pruners in their hands and kind of get understand the concepts of how to make a good thinning cut, a good crown reduction cut, understanding the basic pruning types, the two worst pruning mistakes you can make. And it's a three-hour workshop tomorrow, really reasonable cost, about $40, I think the Desert Botanical Garden charges. And there's several seats left available for tomorrow's class. Just get online, dbg.org, if you would like to attend that class. So that was a little sideline regarding April and the pruning and planting that can be done this time of year.
And that's one thing that's really easy to over-assume you know what you're doing. I mean, how hard is it to get a clipper and a saw and go whack a couple limbs off? But the more I listen, watch, and hear you talk about pruning, the more I realize it's a science. You really have to know what you're doing, and you can easily hurt the tree, and you've got your lion tailing, you've got your
topping cuts.
Mentioned, I think the last time you were on the air, imagine going and doing a huge prune cut. That's like suddenly chopping breakfast out of your daily routine.
Right, the live branches on a tree are providing through photosynthesis the sugars and starches the tree needs to survive and to be healthy.
Which is funny because it's easy to think, well, if I cut these branches off, the rest of the tree is going to do so much better because it has to feed less.
Right. Well, actually, those branches are actually providing the energy reserves to help the tree to put on new growth, to defend against disease and insects and other stresses, and also to for reproduction for flowers and fruit. So yeah, pruning is a blend of an art and a science, and I've always told my students over the years to concentrate on the science, get the science right, and the art will take care of itself. Don't go out into the yard with an aesthetic objective on, I want the tree to look like this. It'd be better to go take a step back and realize that you need to be able to justify every cut, have a clear objective in mind when you're going to do your work, and then from there, select the different types of pruning to accomplish that objective. And we cover that in our classes, and love to have some folks come on out and fill out that class tomorrow. Be great.
And again, that's Desert Botanical Gardens.
Yeah, dbg.org. And you can go to the adult classes there and find a registration form.
Okay, it's Rosie on the house. We're on a live broadcast. I'm going to hand my phone over to John while I switch batteries to our unit. And if you'd like to ask John a question, you can call in at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888. Rosie for you. And John, take it away. You've got about 2 minutes left here to wrap up what's important on April, and I'll get our battery switched out.
Well, April is, as I said, a great time for pruning and planting. We've also got to have a heads up regarding insects. We are pruning a lot for caterpillars on your tachomas, on your bougainvillea. We're always looking for silage on your coscolotes, as well as spider mites on your cypress and other trees. We are always aware of the as trees start to put on new foliage in the spring, it's the advent of a lot of insect activity. So let us know if we can help in any way along those lines. We're beautiful time of year to be putting plants in as well, planting your trees and shrubs and getting out in the garden before it gets too hot. if you do some planting or some pruning and plan to do a little bit of heavier pruning on your shrubs, you want to kind of ease off on that heavier pruning toward the end of April. As the hot weather approaches, you don't want the trees to be completely bare of foliage because you've made some heavier pruning cuts. That juvenile growth that's emerging after the pruning is a little bit sensitive and can be burned by the sun. So you want to just be lighten your pruning as the temperatures increase, you know, reduce the percentage of foliage that you're taking out of your trees as we head into summer. And then you can increase that pruning a little bit more as we temperatures drop again in September, October. We are broadcasting live from ASU campus. We're on the tour to trees. And we've got a sitting here in front of a white sapote, and we're going to be moving to a mesquite tree and a huge cork oak tree on the north side of campus. I'm giving the phone back to Romy.
We are on. It's Rosie on the house, and we have a defective access unit here. The battery lasts like 2 minutes. So we're going to do the rest of this on phone while I look for a power plug-in. And Jennifer is live in the studio to field your calls at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. Now, we won't have a way to know. So, Mom, if you've got somebody that wants to come on, just wait for a break and interject and introduce who's online. And we'll be happy to take their calls. But in the meantime, John, let's start walking towards this mesquite tree. What's so great about a mesquite tree? You can see those everywhere. They're native.
Well, this is an especially huge mesquite tree, which is really awesome because it's between two large buildings. And whenever you put trees between large buildings, they're looking for sunlight. And this one is just an amazing example of what, our hybrid mesquites can do when given a little bit of space, a little bit of room to grow. We've got it's pretty dramatic. We love to see some of our featured trees, and ASU's got the campus space and the lawn area and the irrigation to really let some of these big trees achieve a really large mature size. And I remember being here on campus 37 years ago, and it's just really enjoyable to come back and see some of these same trees I saw then and see how large they become and just really stately monster trees. One especially that we're going to see a little bit later this morning in front of Old Main. It's an old cork oak, which are unusual. You don't see too many of them here. They're the ones that we get our cork, that we use in our cork bottles. They're planted quite widely across the Southwest around the time of the war because a lot of that the cork was used for the life preservers during the war effort, and they are really amazing trees. But we have a huge one here on the ASU campus that we're really proud of, and really Dominique Pichet, certified arborist and owner of the French Arborist, is at that tree, and I'd sure like to have a word or two with her just to say hello and to talk to her about being a woman business owner and also a certified arborist, and we'll be talking to her a little bit later this morning.
On that mesquite tree you were talking about, you had said it's grown larger than normal, probably because it was placed between two buildings looking for light. Does that weaken the tree? What does that do for the root system? And as builders, we always say never plant a tree closer than the expected height to your foundation. So if it's a 20-foot tall tree, plant it 20 feet away.
Yeah, these trees are pretty well anchored. This one's in a large raised planter, and it's got a four-story building next to it. So it would normally grow to probably 25, 30, 40 feet and then start to spread out from there. But because it's still reaching another, it's on the north side of the building, because it's reaching another 15 or 20 feet to get up into some better sunlight, it's just caused it to just really spread and get huge. It's beautiful.
I've never been on ASU campus. Sorry, John. I'm doing a little sightseeing.
I'm walking past your Hayden Library across right near the Memorial Union, and walked these same sidewalks 40 years ago, and it's really a pleasure to be out here. There's a suicide prevention walk happening on campus today. Really worthy cause. There's a
just a little commentary on how things have changed over 40 years. I remember when we would walk these, I just saw a poster a few minutes ago that said, see something, say something in regard to any criminal activity or terrorist activity, you know, watching for things that are unusual because of the threat of terrorism or even crazy people with guns on campuses. Things have really changed in 40 years. Back in our day, we were seeing something and saying something when we would see a beautiful tree and make mention of it like we are today. And it sort of changes your perspective on life when you realize that life isn't the same on any campus these days because of the threat of things going sideways. Here's that big mesquite. Turn right here. There it is.
Oh, man, that is huge. Now, you said ASU is an arboretum. How many trees does it take to create an arboretum? Any idea?
You know, I'm not sure how many are on the actual arboretum tour, but there's got to be at least 30, and we're going to see 11 of them today. But this is the big monster mesquite, and it's got to be every bit of 75 feet tall, I want to say, which is just amazing for a mesquite tree. You just don't see trees achieve this kind of height. But it's loving its location. We're walking along a little mall with a bunch of Brachia armata. These are Mexican blue palms, and they're just don't see these too often in Arizona. It's unfortunate because they are such a different look. Instead of that green fan-shaped leaf that we see on most of our fan palms, these are a blue leaf, a light blue color, and they've got a beautiful foliage that emerges just about now. In fact, I can see some of the seed pods starting to pop out on the top of some of these. They're this long draping, 15-foot long draping yellow seed pods that emerge, really distinct
Hey, guys, we're going to come back. I have a couple questions to send your way at Tour de Trees. Come back to Rosie on the House in just a few minutes here.
I would like to take a moment and thank the ASU engineers at the Life Science Wing Center for putting a 110 electrical outlet on the exterior of their building and without a lock for free power access. We are plugged in now. This is I'm gonna have to come back and do an architectural tour. It's interesting just seeing. You can tell about what decade each one was built, or which it, maybe not even the one it, the decade it was built, but at least because this one obviously is not a 1970s model. That's a much older turn of the century, but I know it's not that old.
Well, the one thing that I noticed after four decades of being on this campus is that the trees here are so much taller, and it's amazing that over near the sciences building this morning, right off of near Gamage Auditorium, there's a grove of 30 Chinese pistache trees that were not there when I was here 30 years ago, and
I often hear you recommend the Chinese pistache.
It's my favorite tree.
I walked through that grove coming in this morning because that's where I parked. And I thought, man, these are really cool trees. What are these? And then there was the Chinese pistache stand for the Tour de Trees, which has us out here.
Right there. And they just impress me more and more that I see them. And now that they're a little more common and the nurseries are developing some great cultivars, they're just a stately tree. They're beautiful. The shape, the structure is strong. You know, that's what we're always looking for. A lot of the faster growing trees are prone to breakage because they're putting on wood so fast that they tend to dump a lot more litter, and they tend to be prone to breakage. And a lot of our, unfortunately, our hybrid mesquites and Palo Verdes tend to have narrow angles of attachment on a lot of branches. You have to watch for those because those can split out. But the Chinese pistache has really nice, more obtuse angled points of attachment between branches, and they're structurally as strong as can be. And a lot like the Chinese elm, which until recently was my favorite tree.
Got replaced.
But it's got replaced by this Chinese pistache. And that's a really great stand. If you haven't seen a Chinese pistache and would like to get a great idea of how they can look in a mature size, come down to ASU. Just little bit east and northeast of the Gamage Auditorium, and it's a great stand.
Go to rosieonthehouse.com and click on the events tab. Then click on Tour de Trees. There is a PDF there that you can download. It has information about today's event along with a map of all the trees that you can self-navigate to. You can walk or ride a bike if you'd like, but I'm going to say it. You're not going to walk more than 2 miles from parking by the time you walk to all these trees and back to where you park.
Yeah, it's a
you'd be hard pressed to put on 2 miles. So it's
and what I noticed too is, as I mentioned before, there's several other trees that are not listed on the tour map that you've provided that are part of the Arboretum tour. And I passed several of additional trees with plaques on them while I was walking the tour. So lots of other really cool trees here on campus.
We were at the White Sapote, is that how you pronounce
mm-hmm.
it? There's a mesquite, a pistache, Aleppo pine, cork oak, pecan, date palm, cottonwood, olive, Montezuma cypress, and what's a carbo?
It's a carob.
Carob. C-A-R-B-O.
B-O. That's a little typo. Yeah, there's a beautiful carob tree here. There's several on campus. The one tree that is really quite amazing is that Montezuma cypress. That is near the law building. That tree was there when I was here 37 years ago, and it's about 20 feet taller than it was then. And it is one cool specimen tree. You will not see one of those that tall around Phoenix very often.
Now, at each one of these trees, there are certified arborists, and they're all out here volunteering their time today. We saw Jesse Sanchez from APS.
Dominique is at the Cork Oak right now.
And then the gentleman that we had
Rick Robinson. He's at the carob tree today.
Oh, boy.
And I haven't even been around since earlier this morning when I did the tour before everyone showed up, who the other arborists are at the various trees. But, yeah, you get a little educational walk today in addition to a beautiful exercise to get around to the tour.
All brought to you in part by the Arizona Forestry Division, Arizona Community Tree Council, Arizona Nursery Association, Valley Permaculture Alliance, Arizona State University, Big Tree Movers. Oh, Bonnie got a sneak plug in there.
I did see Bonnie walking across campus a little while ago.
And Forest Service Department. let's bring our calls in. Jennifer, what do you have lined up for us at 1-888-767-4348 or text to 411-923?
Well, I'm in studio here alone with Bree, and we're sitting here looking out the windows at this beautiful blue sky and white puffy clouds and wishing we were with you down at the Tour de Trees. We have a couple callers who've called in with questions, and one was Bee. And John, she has oleanders. They're a couple years old, well, probably like 4 years old, and she's got that the leaves, some of them turning brown and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wondering if it was watering. I asked her. She said that she waters every other day for 20 minutes. And so she's wondering, is that yellow and brown maybe water-related or not?
Well, it very well could be. That's pretty frequent watering for this time of year. It'd be better to water a little more deeply, a little less frequently. Just make sure that the entire root zone is saturated to a full depth. With a plants that young, probably a depth of 12 to 18 inches would be sufficient right now. And if she's doing that and you're getting the full depth of saturation to the bottom of the root ball, to the deepest roots there, then she doesn't have to water probably for 4 or 5 days, maybe even a week. Putting too much water, we call it putting water on top of water on top of water, is not a good situation. It can cause an anaerobic condition underground, and the roots can simply suffocate, and it can lead to yellowing. There is a very serious bacterial infection called Xylella fastidiosa. It's a leaf scorch.
Say what?
It's a leaf scorch disease, a bacterial leaf scorch that infects a lot of our oleanders here in the valley, and it's very, very serious. There's no known cure for it. If you do have it, and you see, determine that it's not an irrigation problem, you might want to take a tissue sample, a leaf sample, and turn it into a local laboratory for analysis to see if you do have the leaf scorch. If you do, you'll need to replace the oleanders with something different. unfortunately, there's no known cure for bacterial leaf scorch. It's ravaging many neighborhoods around the Phoenix area. Some of the our large estates and homes in the Arcady District in central Phoenix area, where they have large irrigated lots, are losing all their oleanders. Hundreds and hundreds, literally thousands of trees have been lost over the last several years, and more are on their way out right now. I have several customers who are contemplating what to do because they have huge hedges, hundreds of feet long.
And is that specific the whole to hedges, oleanders then? Is it only?
Pardon?
Is it specific to oleanders?
It's specific to oleanders. Yeah, it's vectored by an insect, and once it gets into the vascular system of the plants, there's really no known cure for the disease, and it spreads throughout the entire hedge. It might start in one part, and then it will spread. And despite our efforts to kind of cut it back or cut out the infected areas, we haven't been able to stop it, and it's eventually worked its way through. It causes discoloration and an ugly dieback of some of the foliage. It doesn't just kill the plants overnight, but it's just a matter of time before these beautiful, lush hedges get sparse and start dying back.
And replanting oleanders in that area is just going to...
It's really not a good idea. We've seen some people cut them down and take them out and put new ones back in. There's some talk about the pink variety of oleanders are less susceptible, but we've even seen the pinks get infected. So I'm just recommending people plant something different. We have recommended if you do have oleanders that are affected and you have to take them out, there are a couple of good options for replacement. Of course, citrus, sour orange is our number one recommendation because they can they grow beautifully as a hedge and give you some privacy. You can also think about hop seed. It's not my top choice, but it is a nice hedging plant. And also Arizona rosewood is another option. There's some other types of hedges you can try, but sour orange seems to be the most practical and the most durable and the easiest to maintain. You want to have that consistent look. You don't want a part of it to be growing a different height than the others or looking somehow not having that uniform appearance. So citrus really fits that bill because you can buy those and plant them on 3 or 4 foot centers and have a pretty nice screening hedge in a few years' time.
Can I ask one more question for Bea?
She's
also struggling with spider mites, and she said they're even getting in the house and biting. Is that what they do?
Never heard of that. Never heard of mites. The mites that get into our trees some are almost too small to be seen. So I'm not sure that they have biting parts that could affect humans.
Okay.
But yeah, we get a lot of spider mites this time of year, especially on cypress and a few other types of plants, junipers, and they form a little web. You can usually see the webs on the leaves of your plants, and they need some attention. If you can't deal with them with high pressure water or insecticidal soap, there are some other heavier chemicals that can be used to spray them.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Was that the only question?
No, I do have a question from a texter as well, as if you'd like that one. John, he's listening to you talk about it being a good time to prune, and he has a Texas Ranger and a Bird of Paradise. And how would you prune those two?
Yeah, this is a great time to be cutting some of those back if you're wanting to reduce the size of some of your overgrown shrubs. Now's a good time to make the pruning cuts. The Texas Ranger is pretty durable. You can make some significant reduction cuts on those. I wouldn't recommend cutting them all the way back to the ground like we would an oleander or a bougainvillea or a Mexican Bird of Paradise or lantana or some of our other shrubs that you can cut back radically. We call it hard pruning, almost to the ground. Sage, your Texas Ranger is a type of sage, and you can cut them back significantly, but be a little less aggressive. But now's a good time because it's cool enough where the new growth can emerge and get established before the real hot weather comes in another month or so.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you've got a question for John Eisenhower, you can also text in to 411-923. Ask your question. And you know what? If you come down, we're actually, if you're on down here on the Tour de Trees and you're streaming the broadcast on your app through the KTAR app, you can come find us at the Life Science Tower and ask a question live on the air. We're plugged in on the west side of it, right next to the mesquite tree on number four on the tour. It's a beautiful day and a beautiful opportunity to experience a wealth of education, John, as it relates to trees. You really couldn't find anywhere else. There's a different arborist with a different background, different experience at every single tree. And we are broadcasting live this hour, Tour de Trees, held this year at ASU campus. Last year it was down on the Central Corridor in the old historic districts. ASU campus this year. I think this is the second year they've done Tour de Trees. Is that what I read?
Yeah, this is the second annual. Yeah, hope it'll be an annual event.
A repeat going. So we are, the tour opened at 8:30. It goes to 11:30. You can go to rosieonthehouse.com in the events page. Click on Tour de Trees. Download your map. Park anywhere on ASU campus. You don't need to worry about the meters. They are off on Saturday, so it's free parking. And give yourself a self-guided tour. You can either walk it or bicycle it. There's a first set of cyclists we saw is just pulled up here to tree number four where we're at for the huge mesquite. Before we get to the final details, a couple text questions to take care of real quick here. Mr. Eisenhower, our talking trees expert. This homeowner has twisted myrtle trees on a home they just purchased, and they want to know, how do they take care of them?
Well, twisted myrtle is a relatively small tree. It's actually a large shrub or a small tree, and they're really a little tricky to prune properly. They build up a little bit of dead leaves, in the interior, because as the tree gets larger, it shades the interior, so you get a little bit of dieback on the inside. We'll often go in there with just our gloves on and rake those dead leaves out with your hands rather than try to get in there with a saw or with pruners and just sort of knock those loose. They'll come down real easily. But then be very selective and careful in making any reduction cuts on the outside. Definitely don't use a hedge trimmer. We don't recommend a hedge trimmer on any of your shrubs. If you can use a hand pruners, you'll just have a much more natural look to the plant, but especially with twisted myrtle. They're a little subject to sunburn, so you don't want to be opening the whole canopy up. If it's getting a little too rangy, you might want to just be careful. If you do cut a large branch back into the toward the center of the plant, try to cut back to a lateral branch that's at least one-third the diameter of the one you're cutting, because then the tree, instead of suckering out a bunch of ugly new growth out of that pruning cut, the tree will direct the water and nutrients into that lateral branch, that side branch, and it will look a lot more natural. It will hide the pruning cut, and you'll have a much better appearance than to cut a branch back at an arbitrary location and leave a stub, because that's, like I said, that stub will soon sprout with four or five other little sprouts, and then you'll have an ugly witch's broom of growth out on the end of the branch, which leads to even further problems. It'll shade the tree more than it should naturally, and you'll get more dieback inside. And
I didn't know that's what you called it, a witch's broom. You see a lot of people do that on old, mature mulberries that they don't want to completely cut down, mm-hmm. but have just taken over the area on some of the older 1950s ranch-style homes. You can see it just completely whacked, yeah. and then every...
Yeah, they'll cut
every whack. It's a horrible look, but if that's the only thing you got to do to save the tree.
That's actually a pruning practice called pollarding, and it is, if it's done well, it can be done. Certain types of trees can sustain pollarding, but most can't. Speaking of over pruning, do we have a minute to talk about sunburn? I just wanted to talk about the this time of year we have a lot of difficulty with trees being over pruned, or for various reasons have sunburn problems. It can start by having a tree that's not tolerant for a lot of sun, and it's planted on the south or the west side. We talked about that white sapote, for instance, this morning. Not a good tree to put on a sunny side, a very exposed part of the yard. and other plants that have tend to have larger leaves are really subject to sunburn. So, and also just poor placement too, as I said, south and west side, you want to try to avoid that. But we also recommend a couple of things to do if you do have some sunburn problems and you're wanting to know how to deal with that. We've been using a burlap wrap product. It's a 6-inch wide burlap, and we wrap it around some of the vulnerable areas on our trees, and it's giving some sun protection. The burlap is a loose enough weave that we can actually wrap it just once, and it lets a little bit of sunlight through, but it does provide you as much protection as you need. There's also antitranspirants, which can be applied to smooth-barked trees that are exposed to too much sun. Sometimes if there's been some over-pruning and you're really concerned about the damage to the cambium, we can come in and put an antitranspirant, spray it on. It's kind of like a sunblock for trees, and it's a really an organic product. It's just a kale and clay, essentially, and it's sprayed on. It provides some reduced the surface temperature on those smooth bark trees and might give you some temporary relief from sunburn.
And your class tomorrow?
Class tomorrow is at Desert Botanical Garden. It's from 2 to 5 o'clock, and there's still some seats available. You can get to the registration page on the DBG website at dbg.org and just go to the adult education classes, and you'll find that pruning class tomorrow.
Excellent. What is the cost of that?
I think it's about $40.
And that's paid to the Botanical Garden.
Yes, it is. It's a little cheaper for members. So if you're a member, you get in for about $5 or $10 cheaper.
And then today, tour day trees?
Yes. What about the tour? Coming down here to
ASU?
ASU campus? Well, absolutely. Come out and check it out. Romy and I are going to take the rest of the tour right now, see some more of these trees. It's been a lot of fun. Love to see you down here.
And if somebody wanted to get a hold of Integrity Tree Service during the week?
You can reach us at itreeservice.com, itreeservice.com.
Or 602?
788-0005.
Excellent. It's Rosie on the House. We're turning the broadcast back over to Rosie, who's broadcasting live from the Tucson Convention Center for the Saba Home Show.
Keep Rosie on the House the number one referral directory in the state by voting at rosieonthehouse.com or ranking Arizona.